Mako and Han didn't plan to tell anyone but the High Command that they were in possession of the Imperial battle plan. They figured that might make the smugglers overconfident, and that would be disastrous for their side. Also, some smugglers would sell their grandmothers for enough credits, and they couldn't afford a security leak. As Han sat beside him, Mako called up a holographic schematic on his datapad and projected it above the tabletop. "Look here." Mako used a laser pointer to indicate the small, holographic representations of the ships in question. "We've got the Imp capital ships coming out of hyperspace here and advancing on Nar Shadda, and 16 skirmish line ships, Guardian-class light cruisers. They'll be coming out of hyperdrive in a shell formation to surround Nar Shadda. Then we've got two recon line vessels. That'll be these Carrick-class cruisers, one on each side, here and here. Everybody got that?"
"Got it,"
the group agreed. "And then, back here in a wedge formation, are the three dreadnoughts and the three bulk cruisers, the heavy stuff. Remember that these dreadnoughts each carry 12 TIE fighters, and the Carrick-class light cruisers each carry 4 recon TIEs. That's at least 44 TIEs we're going to have to deal with." The members of Mako's High Command looked at each other with worried expressions. Han was quick to reassure them. "Hey, we can handle these TIEs," he insisted. "No shielding, don't forget. They're fast little suckers, true, but even a brush with a quad or turbo laser beam and boom." "Okay," Lando spoke up. "So we know what the Imperial force is and how they're going to approach us. How do we fight back against them, using freighters and a few one-man fighters like the one Ro has been building?" Everyone turned to look at the senior smuggler.
"Yeah, I've almost finished work on her," Roa said. "She's gonna be a sweet little ship to handle."
"What are you naming her?" Blue asked with an impish grin. Roa grinned back at her.
"The Luwil, of course," he replied.
Roa and his lady love, Luwil, had been an on-again, off-again item on Nar Shadda for over 10 years.
"We have one big advantage," Roa said. "So much space junk in that ring around Nar Shadda that ships could hide behind it or beneath it or in its shadow and then pop out and catch the imp fleet by surprise."
Mako nodded excitedly.
"I think you got something there, Roa," he said, "and it might work, especially if we staged a couple of ships frantically running for cover. Freighters, they'll think they're sieves, and got the imps to chase them until they're right where we want them, then wham! We pop out of cover and clobber them. Okay, that should enable us to take care of a good percentage of those skirmish ships," Han said. "But what do we do about the recon vessels and that wedge of capital-class ships, the dreadnoughts and bulk cruisers?"
A gloomy silence fell. Finally, Mako spoke up.
"I know the Hutts are hiring a mercenary force, probably pirates, to defend Nalhutta. If that merc captain has any smarts, he'll recognize that we could add significantly to his firepower. Maybe we can get him, whoever he is, to take part in the battle."
Han was studying the wedge of capital-class ships.
"All of these ships have forward-firing main guns," he said. "Too bad we can't hit them with a flank attack, but we just don't have the ships to do it."
"Maybe that's where we can convince the mercs to help us," Mako said.
"Yeah, provided we could create some kind of diversion so the pirates could flank them," Han said.
Han had been staring into the holographic display, thinking how real the minuscule fleet appeared, down to the tiny TIE fighters.
"Too bad we can't project a holograph at the imps and make them believe they're under attack."
The idea suddenly coalesced in his brain.
"That's it!" he shouted. "That could work!"
Conversation around the table ceased, and everyone stared at the Corellian. Han grinned at his friends excitedly.
"Hey, I think I may know somebody who can provide us with that head-on attack force. We can use them as a diversion long enough to distract those heavy cruisers."
Leaping to his feet, Han gestured at Mako. "I've got to put in a call." Admiral Winstell Greelanks felt uneasy about this mission. If only it were as cut and dried as it appeared on the surface. Go to Nar Shadda, wipe out the wretched smugglers, and then blockade the Yutaub system. But it was far from being that simple. Less than a full day after Moff Schild had called him into his office on Teth to give Greelanks his marching orders, the Admiral had received a message in the most secret Imperial code, sent eyes only, under the tightest security to Greelanks' personal comlink. He had memorized the short message, which read, Admiral Winstell Greelanks, eyes only, destroy after reading. Regarding Narshada, Nalhutta engagement, you are advised for the good of your empire to engage the enemy and suffer a strategic defeat. Minimize imperial losses and withdraw in good order. Repeat, you are to lose, Admiral. Do not attempt to confirm these orders. Do not discuss them with anyone. If you fail to comply, no excuses will be accepted. Do not fail. What did it all mean? Greelanks wondered. Someone very high up wanted Sarn Shild's foray against the Hutts to fail. Who and why? Greelanks was not a particularly imaginative or intelligent man, but he was smart enough to realize that if he told Sarn Shild about those orders, he would sound like a madman. He had no proof that he had received them. The encoded message had been time-sensitive, impossible to copy except manually, and designed to vanish within minutes after being downloaded. And then had come the Hutt bribe. Could the two things be related somehow, he wondered, or was it just an incredible coincidence? Greelanks had no way to tell. All he could do was obey and hope for the best. Han, Chewbacca, and Sala Zend stood together on the windswept landing platform, watching Zavari's ship land. Moments later, a figure with long black hair appeared and started down the ramp. That's her, come on, Han told Sala. Chewie was already loping forward, growling a friendly greeting. After Zavari greeted Chewie with a big hug and a Wookiee head rub, she turned back to Han and Sala. Zavari, I want you to meet Sala Zend, Han said as the two women stood regarding each other. Zavari, this is Sala, smuggler and expert mechanic.
Hi, pleased to meet you,
Sala said, sticking out her hand.
My pleasure, Zavari said, shaking hands. Any friend of Solo's is a friend of mine.
Han was vastly uncomfortable. I've never had two girlfriends meet each other before, he thought. Later, at Han's favorite Corellian eatery, he explained his plan to Zavari. Zavari shook her head. You don't ask much, do you, Solo?
Hey, Han said, trying to grin. Think of it as a challenge. Your greatest illusion ever.
Zavari frowned.
But even if we could create the image of a fleet, the imp sensors would tell them it was an illusion. They'd ignore it. Maybe we could jam their sensors, Sala suggested.
You know something, Zavari said. I think I'm getting an idea. I think we may be able to use the traffic control buoys to send false data to the imps, so they'll see the hollow illusion at the same time as their sensors pick up data that tells them what they're seeing is real.
Sala was excited.
Great, that sounds perfect.
Zavari smiled at her.
But I'll need help building all this. Slicers to help reprogram the traffic control buoys. Techs to build the projectors for the illusion.
Sala grinned back.
Shug and I will help.
When Han and Chewie arrived at the Chance Castle for the big briefing of their combat pilots, Mako was already on stage, exchanging jokes and jibes with his audience. When he saw Han and Chewie, the senior smuggler rapped his knuckles on the rostrum to get his audience's attention.
Okay, here's how we're going to pull this little trick off.
Han took over at Mako's gesture.
Each of our ships is going to go to its hiding place among the debris or lose itself in regular space traffic. The rest of us will just be innocent little spacers and properly panicked when the imps zoom into view. Right, gang?
Yeah, right!
They yelled, loving the idea of getting the drop on the arrogant Imperial Navy. Mako took over again.
Okay. At that point, the imps will send in their pickets for a quick look around. The imp admiral will be expecting us to think that this is the big attack. What we're going to do is make it look like we've thrown everything we have against the first imp ships to cruise up to Narshada. We'll have the advantage of numbers, and this is our home ground. But when he gets over being shocked and upset, he'll send in his heavy capital-class ships. If we can really hurt even one or two of those heavies, the imps will almost certainly withdraw, since they won't be able to complete their job, and it's standard Imperial doctrine to cut your losses and run if you can't win.
So how do we hurt them, Mako?
Yelled a human smuggler. We've worked out a strategy that we think will do the trick. When those big guys come at us, we'll pretend to give way. We want them to chase you. Right around here. Mako used the pointer to indicate a point in space close to Narshada. We're going to have our own big ships waiting,
and we have a little surprise for our Imperial friends. Zavary is going to create the illusion that a really big fleet is coming at the imps from the direction of Nalhutta. That's when we'll hit him in the flank and from the rear with everything we've got. Han stepped forward. Just to let you know, Captain Renthal and her pirate ships will be waiting with Mako and our big ships. Drea Renthal nodded from her front row seat.
I'll do my part, she said. My pirate fleet was hired by the Hutts to keep the imps from getting near Nalhutta. After seeing your battle plan, I agree that this is the best way to accomplish that. She turned to face the smugglers. So you can count on us to fight with you all the way.
Han and Mako had told almost no one the actual time that Greelanx was planning to attack. Some of the smuggler high command realized that Han and Mako knew the timing of the operation, but they accepted the two ex-Imperials' decision that it would be better for most of the smugglers not to know. Lando, Shug, Sala, Rick Duel, Blue, and Jarek, all of them were aware that one of the times they went out on a drill, it would wind up being the real thing. The other smugglers did not know.
When's the next drill? Shug asked.
Don't know, Han lied. Mako will call this one. Is the Rimrunner ready? The holo projectors in place? The traffic buoys ready?
Ready,
Shug confirmed.
Did I tell you we've got some good news? Han asked.
No, what?
Mako had been planning to command the resistance from Renthal's fist. But a couple of days ago, we realized we'd got lucky. Guess who forgot to send a pilot to bring her personal yacht back to Nalhutta?
You mean Juliak left Dragon Pearl here?
Shug was incredulous.
Yeah, and Juliak's conscientious about keeping her ship combat ready. Also, we talked Blue into piloting. That way, Mako can concentrate on his tactical screens, keeping track of everything.
Roa headed for his assigned coordinates, swooping past Nar Shadda, and reached them in only a few minutes' flight time. As he approached his station, he anticipated hearing his headphones come to life with Mako's message that he'd heard so often before.
All ships return to base. This was a drill. All ships return to base after completing your drill.
Seconds later, as expected, the aging smuggler heard Mako's voice.
Attention! Attention! All you space bums, listen up. This is it. The imps have appeared on our sensors. This is it. This is not a drill. Repeat, not a drill. This is the real thing, kiddies. Prepare to engage the enemy.
Roa's eyes widened.
Huh? Not a drill?
As Mako's voice faded from his hearing, Roa stared, taut with fear, as the first Imperial vessel popped out of hyperspace. On the bridge of the Dragon Pearl, Mako Spence watched the sensors and tactical readouts, hardly daring to blink. The Pearl was too large to actually hide amid the floating hulks and debris, the way some of the smaller vessels could, but he'd ordered Blue to position her so that the Carrick-class ships wouldn't spot her until the smugglers had the imp vessels where they wanted them. Mako saw that one Carrick-class ship, the Outpost, had altered course to approach the other side of Nar Shadda, while the Vigilance continued towards the ambush. That made sense, since Greelanx couldn't know where the smugglers would engage him. Once the smuggler attack began, the Outpost would probably just wait there, rather than engaging, ready to report on and possibly engage any smuggler ships attempting to escape the Imperial attack. The other Carrick class, the one whose ship ID broadcast identified her as the Vigilance, continued to move toward his position. Almost there, Mako thought, wiping his sweating palms on his trousers. Almost. Snapping on his comm, Mako said, All right, commence attack. First strike element, attack now, boys and girls. Get those ties, and I'll move in on that Carrick class. Be prepared to back me up. We're gonna nail that sucker. The Pearl was now moving toward the Carrick class ship, which was only then realizing it was being challenged. The Vigilance swung toward the yacht, and the two vessels engaged. The Carrick class, of course, had the advantage in the fight. It was armored much more heavily than the yacht, had better shielding and more weaponry. The Hutt yacht shuddered with the blasts over and over. We're losing the starboard shielding, Blue said tersely. Another hit there and...
The Pearl lurched horribly like a wounded animal dragged down by a predator's claws. Blue swore.
Fire! Hit him again!
Gilliatt's yacht shuddered as the turbo lasers fired again, then again. Mako was dying to get up and see for himself what was happening, but the ship was pitching so violently that it would have been dangerous. All he needed was a broken arm or neck.
Blast, Blue said. We've lost three turbo laser mounts.
Make that four.
Blue, what in blazes is going on?
Mako yelled over the next volley. Are we hurting them at all?
Yeah, she grunted. We're hurting them. Fire, boys, again!
Unable to stand the suspense any longer, Mako unsnapped his harness and staggered across the heaving deck to see what was going on. He let out a whoop of glee.
His port shields are down!
So are our starboard ones, Blue snarled. But baby, we've got him now. Disengage! Mako raced back to his comm center.
All right, listen up. Too late now. Minestra, Defense Central calling. Come in. Over.
Mako was addressing two of the mercenary vessels that had been assigned to these coordinates.
Good news, guys. We just took down Vigilance's port shields.
We're already moving in to finish them off,
said Minestra's captain.
Mako, we saw the pounding you took. You'd better get out of here before more imps show up.
Okay, Mako answered. My ship's out of it, at least until we do some damage control, so I'm heading for Illusion Point ahead of schedule. You guys stick it out. Those skirmish ships should be arriving any minute. Admiral Greelank stared at Commander Jellin's tiny hollow figure, taken aback by his subordinate's report.
You say that the Vigilance is out of the battle? Captain Elden is dead?
Yes, Admiral. I regret to say it, sir.
What about his ties?
All destroyed, sir.
Greelank was too disciplined to swear aloud, but he did so mentally.
Order the skirmish ships to full speed. Order two squadrons of ties to accompany them. Instruct them to engage the enemy at will.
Yes, sir.
We'll show these wretched criminals,
Greelank thought angrily, completely forgetting, for the moment, that he was supposed to lose this battle. Mako Spence heaved a sigh of relief when the crippled Dragon Pearl managed to reach Illusion Point and the relative protection offered by the bigger ships in Drea Renthal's mercenary fleet. He checked his sensors, all the while listening to his ships report in. The smugglers were doing well against the imp skirmish vessels. They were taking losses, though, ships they couldn't afford to lose. Mako frowned as he checked ship after ship. I'm losing a lot of friends today, he thought sadly. Too many good ships and people gone. He ran a status check. Almost 25% of his smuggler vessels gone. Even if they won this battle, the smuggling operations out of Nar Shadda were going to be affected for a long, long time. But the imps had probably lost half their TIE fighters and nearly 50% of their skirmish ships. Mako stared into his sensors. Greelank is making his move. The capital ships are accelerating to attack speed. He keyed his comm to his general frequency. Boys and girls, this is Defender Central. You've done good, fellow space bums. Now it's time to leave the party. All vessels, retreat along assigned vector. Zavary stood in a cordoned off section in Shug Ninx's space barn, intent on the tactical display she was receiving, transmitted by Dragon Pearl. She watched as the smugglers turned tail and raced away from the oncoming Imperial capital ships and remaining skirmish vessels. The magician licked her lips in anticipation. This was her big chance to wipe out more imps at one time than she'd probably ever get again. That's right, she thought, watching the wedge move closer and closer to the Illusion Point coordinates. That's right. Chase them right into the trap. Then, there they were. The entire capital wedge was right in the middle of the IP coordinates. Zavary activated her comm. Mako, Zavary here.
This is Mako. Zavary, I read you.
Activating illusion now, she said, and broke contact. Then, slowly, deliberately, she pressed the big red button on her console, the one marked, Don't touch unless you're Zavary.
Now you die, she whispered.
The smugglers had fought hard. Greelanks had to admit that.
but the sight of his big ships had obviously terrified them, frightened them so badly that any fighting spirit they'd had was gone. Now they were running like Corellian Vrelts before a pack of canoids.
Admiral Greelank, sir.
The sensor operator spoke up urgently.
Sir, I'm getting something. But where did it...
We've got incoming, sir.
Greelank took a quick glance at the sensors, then turned to look out the viewport. His eyes widened.
Coming straight at them from the direction of Nalhutta were hundreds of smuggler ships of assorted sizes, including several Corellian corvettes.
Mercenaries, Greelank thought. The smugglers don't have anything that large. The huts must have held these mercenaries in reserve, then launched them in desperation, he decided.
Greelank cleared his throat.
Commander Jelen, instruct the Wedge and our fighters to execute a 110-degree turn, Y-axis, and engage the newcomers. When they have completed their maneuver, they may fire at will.
Han Solo had stayed back behind the other smugglers during the retreat. When he finally emerged from the shell of debris, he found himself actually trailing the Imperial fleet. He could see them ahead of him, and considered trying to loop around them at top speed so he could take part in the attack that was planned at the IP coordinates. Ahead of him, he spotted a pair of vessels on his sensors, and was surprised when he checked their vessel IDs and found that the wayward pair was Sala and Lando in Rimrunner and the Falcon. Moments later, Han heard Lando's voice.
Han, old buddy!
Lando, I'm behind you, wondering how to get past the imp fleet so I can get back into action.
Sala and I were just wondering the same thing. I don't want to miss out on that chance to score some more hits on those imp skirmish ships.
Master Lando.
The precise tones were unmistakably those of Lando's pilot droid.
Would you like me to swing us around so we can fly back to the action with Captain Solo?
Yeah, Vuffy Ra, why don't you do that? Oh, and don't call me Master.
Yes, Master.
Moments later, the three vessels were flying together. Han was fiercely glad to find out his friends were okay. It felt good, all of them flying together, united against the Imperials. He keyed his comm.
Lando, Sala,
we're close enough to the Wedge to be able to do a 2-second hyperspace micro jump right into the middle of the illusion. Let's give Zavari's fleet some real teeth.
Hey, Han, that illusion is only going to be good for another couple of minutes,
Lando protested.
We can't possibly get a course out of the Nava computers in time.
I got it covered, Han said. You just order that fancy little droid of yours to compute our micro jump and put the three of us right in front of that fleet. He can dump the figures into our Nava computers over the comm. Moments later, Vuffy Ra said,
course laid in.
Punch it! Han yelled.
The stars striated around him for a brief second, then he found himself racing straight at the Imperial fleet. Han glanced from one side to the other, saw that Lando and Sala were still in formation with him. And behind them and to either side of them stretched Zavari's illusion. Even though he'd been prepared for something big, Han was impressed.
All right, he yelled. Thanks, Vuffy Ra.
As the Phantom Fleet drew nearer the Imperial Wedge, the big capital ships began blasting away. Han realized immediately that there was a huge advantage to being part of an illusion. With this many ships to shoot at, chances were pretty good that none of the three solid vessels would be targeted. Captain Reldo Douglas, in command of Peacekeeper, the Imperial Dreadnought, shook his head in disgust.
Cease fire, he snapped. It's not real. It can't be. Our shots haven't taken out a single ship, and none of their shots have done us the slightest bit of harm. We're just wasting our fire and our time.
He studied the tactical array and saw a number of ships heading for Peacekeeper's stern, coming fast.
Vessels approaching from the rear, he said. Turn to bring our forward turbo laser battery to bear on them. Lock in weapons. Prepare to fire on my order.
Slowly, the big ship began to swing around. His pilot gave a strangled yelp, and the Peacekeeper shuddered. Red laser fire spattered against its forward shield.
They're not all phantoms, Douglas realized. Turn back, he shouted. Fire on that ship.
Mako cheered as he watched five of Renthal's Y-Wings strafed the dreadnought Peacekeeper's stern. Apparently, Han, Sala, and Lando had pulled some typically harebrained stunt to keep the Peacekeeper occupied until the Y-Wings could move in. Mako could make out their blips following the Y-Wings, waiting for those proton torpedoes to deal with the shields before wasting shots on the big vessel. As the Y-Wings swooped by on their second pass, blackened holes began appearing in the dreadnought's starboard flank where its massive engines were. Now that the shields were down, other smugglers were attacking the dreadnought's stern with abandon. Mako could tell that the imp captain was trying to turn his ship so he could fire on it, but the ship was unresponsive. And then, suddenly, there was a bright flare on the Peacekeeper's starboard side, and the light from its engines went out. Mako whistled softly. I think he's in trouble.
Sir, the starboard reactor overloaded. The safety shut it down, Reldo Douglas' second-in-command on the Peacekeeper reported. No engine power remaining, sir.
Douglas looked around, feeling desperate. The smuggler ships were too small to do him much damage quickly, but over time they could cut his ship to ribbons with their little lasers.
We've got to restart those engines or we've had it, Douglas said. Override the failsafe. We need power.
Douglas was counting on the fact that the override on the reactor was designed to trip long before there was actual danger of an explosion. Douglas heard his ship's engines fire. Peacekeeper strained, lurched, then crept slowly forward. And then shuddered in agony as her starboard engine exploded. The port engine was still firing, however, and the unequal thrust sent the dreadnought into a dizzying spin. Reldo Douglas watched in utter terror as the stars whirled by, then the surface of Nar Shadda, hazy because of the moon's planetary shield, then the stars, then the moon. Do something, his mind screamed. We're being drawn by the moon's gravity. In about a minute, we're going to hit Nar Shadda's energy shield. Douglas strove for dignity. He was, after all, an Imperial officer. Can anyone think of anything that might help? He asked, keeping his voice steady and calm. His bridge crew looked at him silently. The law of gravity was, in this case, as cruel and inexorable as any of those imposed by the Emperor. Stars, moon, stars, moon so close now. Stars, moon, and then there was only the moon, clutching them to her, dragging them into her shield. And then there was nothing at all. For a man who had been granted his wish, Admiral Winstell Greelanks was remarkably unhappy. The Admiral stared at his tactical screens, his sensors, saw the damage his squadron had taken, and was absolutely furious. Greelanks fought back the urge to rally his troops and continue the battle. He couldn't do that. He'd been looking for a way to justify withdrawal, and now it had been handed to him. He turned to Commander Jellin.
Order our ships to fold back in an orderly fashion.
Jellin stared at his commanding officer in open surprise.
Retreat, sir?
Yes, retreat, Greelanks said harshly. We cannot achieve our directive here in the Yataub system. Approved tactical wisdom dictates an orderly retreat, while we still have some control over the situation.
Usually, Greelanks would no more justify his orders to a subordinate than he would step out an airlock without a spacesuit. But in his mind, he was composing his official report, trying those phrases on for size. Jellin snapped to attention and saluted formally.
Yes, sir!
Twenty-four hours after Han and Chewie had brought the Bria safely back to Nar Shadda, undamaged save for a weakened stern shield over her engine housing, Han and Zavary stood together on a windswept landing platform.
How can I find words to thank you, Zavary? Your illusion saved us. Without you, we wouldn't have been able to do it.
She smiled at him, her dark eyes full of affection.
Hey, Solo, I wouldn't have missed it for all the credits in the galaxy. I just wish I'd been on the bridge of a few of those Imperial ships to see their reaction.
Impulsively, he reached out and took her hands, then found himself hugging her fiercely.
When he pulled back a bit, she reached up and kissed him firmly on the mouth. "Don't worry," she said with a smile. "Sala won't mind. I hope you two are happy, Solo. You take care of each other, okay?" Han nodded. "Don't forget me, Solo."
"Never," he said, his throat tight.
Zavari pulled away, and he let her go. She ran up the ramp, into her ship, and did not look back. Three days after the Battle of Nar Shadda, as it was coming to be known, Han, Chewie, Sala, and Lando attended Roa's wedding. It was generally known that the three smugglers had been instrumental in turning the tide of battle in Nar Shadda's favor. Han and his friends were the toast of the party. Lando came up to Roa, threw an arm around the smuggler's shoulders, and said, "I understand that getting out of the smuggling business is one of the conditions to this wedding, Roa."
"That's right."
"Well, you're going to need honest employment, then. Would you like to work for me, managing my used spaceship lot? I'm going on an extended trip, and I need someone reliable to look after the business." Roa looked very thoughtful.
"Well, sure. I think I'd like that."
"Thanks, Lando. So why are you heading out? Got something planned?"
"Vuffy Ra and I are heading back to the Centrality. I've got a hunch I can make a quick fortune running cargo to those backward planets. And," Lando smiled, "if that doesn't work, there are always the casinos in the Ocean system. It'll do me good to polish up my sabacc game. If I can raise the stake, I'm going to get myself into the big sabacc game that's being held on Bespin in 6 months. Ante's 10,000 credits." Han, who had been wandering past, stopped when he heard Lando's speech.
10,000 credits," he whistled softly. "That's too rich for my blood."
Durga the Hutt crouched beside his parents' repulsor sled, grief-stricken, watching the med droids and Grodo, the Hutt physician, work desperately to save Eric. But even he could tell that their efforts were doomed to failure. Eric had collapsed minutes ago, gasping in pain, retching, moaning, then jerking in frenzied spasms. Durga had never felt so helpless as he watched his parent struggle for life. It was a relief when the Basadi Lord's straining heart finally gave up the struggle. But even though he was glad that his parent was free of the terrible pain, Durga was devastated. He had lost his best friend, as well as his parent. He clutched Eric's limp hand, seeing the rivulets of green slobber running out the slack, dead mouth, and knew, without knowing how he knew, that this death was murder. Who had done this? Who else but Dasilajic stood to profit by Eric's death? Durga refused to let his parents' body be interred. He had Eric's massive corpse frozen and resolved to hire a team of forensic specialists from Coruscant to perform a thorough autopsy as soon as things settled down.
"Someone is going to pay for this,"
he vowed every morning when he looked at Eric's hollow hanging on the wall in his chamber.
"And they will pay dearly."
This time around, the snooty administrative aide waved Han into Admiral Greelank's private sanctum without question. Greelank stared at the sparkling fortune in assorted untraceable gems, and his eyes lit up.
"Young man, these stones are exactly as specified. Please tell your hut masters that I am satisfied."
Greelank broke off as the door suddenly opened, and his aide stood there, eyes wide and frightened.
"Admiral, sir..."
"What is it?"
Greelanks was annoyed.
"Sir, I was just advised by the docking bay crew. He has just landed. An unscheduled inspection, apparently. He is on his way to speak with you at this moment."
Greelanks took a deep breath, then waved the man out.
"I suppose I should have anticipated this under the circumstances," he muttered, racing over to the wall.
Behind a certificate of merit, there was a wall lockup unit. Greelank stood for a moment, letting the unit scan his retinas. The door swung open, and the admiral dumped the jewels in.
"You'll have to wait in here,"
Greelank told Han as he grabbed his arm and shoved him into his assistant's office. The door seal to the outer office hissed. Then came another sound that the Corellian recognized. Harsh, stentorian breathing. Respirations that were artificially stimulated because the wearer was unable to breathe on his own. The visitor was wearing a respirator mask. Somehow, the sound of those loud, hissing breaths was ominous. Han swallowed and didn't make a noise. Grilenk said, in a deliberately bright, pleasant tone that was supposed to sound casual, but instead sounded terrified,
"My lord! What an unexpected pleasure!"
"Grilenk,"
said a deep, mechanically enhanced voice that made Han's skin crawl.
"You are as stupid as you are greedy. Did you imagine that the High Command would remain unaware of your treachery?"
Now Grilenk made no attempt to hide his fear.
"My lord, please. You don't understand. I was wrong."
His voice broke off in a choked cry. Silence, except for that loud, harsh breathing. Silence for many seconds. The heavy footsteps came again. Then the sound of the door seal activating. Silence. Han waited a good 5 minutes before he dared to unseal the door and peer out. He wasn't particularly surprised to find Grilenk sprawled on the carpet. He checked for a pulse and found none. What was surprising was that there wasn't a mark on the body. Han stood there looking down at the Admiral's dead features, which were frozen in a look of utter terror. He shivered. Who was that guy? I'm getting out of here, Han decided. He walked back, stepped over Grilenx's outflung hand, and then stopped when something his toe had kicked rolled across the carpet. Han stooped and grabbed it exultantly. A crate dragon pearl. Small, but it seemed, to the naked eye, flawless. Opalescent black. A valuable color. Sealing the jewel in an inside pocket, Han hurried out. 10 minutes later, he'd finished making the preparations for his escape. He stood by the hatch on the life pod deck, hastily finishing a rewiring job on the pod ejection controls. He froze as he heard a step, then a familiar voice. "Stop right there, Han. Turn around. Slowly." Han recognized that voice and found, as he'd expected from the voice, his old friend, Tedris Bajalan.